When they express like, go away, I don't like you, and you're like, well, no, I'm here forever for you. I love you. and then you turn into like creepy guy.
Yes.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Ted, welcome once again to Trailer Junkies Podcast.
Hey, Jimmy, how was your week?
Yeah, week was good. Week of spring break. Got a lot done. I was productive at home. A lot of spring cleaning type chores and finished off the weekend with some local winery action.
Oh, that's nice.
So how about yourself? Yeah, how was your week?
Had a rough week. I was started off sick. Had to go to the doctor on Monday, Tuesday, and then again on Friday for myself. Audrey, my daughter, broke her finger on Wednesday.
Oh, man.
So she was at the doctor's office on Wednesday night and then again on Saturday morning. And then my wife, she gets the prize for the only person to have dentist issues because she's flossing too much.
Like, I'm too healthy, I'm sick.
No, I floss so aggressively that I damaged my gums in flossing. So
no way.
So while I was off to the optometrist, she had to go to the dentist and get antibiotics and all that stuff. So yes, we're infirmary up here, but we're all in the mend.
So I'm assuming that Audrey's finger is fine and, well, maybe not fine, but it's on the mend and healing and she's casted up and everything.
She's on the mend. I'm on my 10-day medicine, my medication. So I should be on the mend as well.
Like the Z-Pack or whatever?
Yeah. And Anne's doing her antibiotics. And Bryce is just bebopping along. He's not sick at all, so he's fine.
The kid who doesn't floss, doesn't brush his teeth, sits on the sofa, eats junk food like he's perfect, right?
Yep.
Okay. Well, man, sorry to hear about all the... Well, I'm glad Bryce is good, but sorry to hear about everybody else getting sick and injured and, you know, flossing too hard. The aggressive flosser. She hate flosses. I'm getting after it. Yes. You know? All right. So what's on the agenda for tonight?
Yeah. So I was actually listening to another podcast. As we know, we're fans of podcasts. And I heard a podcast from the company Filmstruck. I don't know if you're a fan, if you're familiar with them.
No, I'm not. Filmstruck. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, they do. It's a streaming service, but for classic movies. So, you know, for whatever $100 a year, you can stream all the classic movies you want, all the Citizen Kane you want. And it's owned by Turner Movie Classics.
When you say classics, you're talking like 1940s, 50s film noir?
Yeah.
Oh.
All the way through anything Criterion, because Turner Classic Movies... Is that Turner Movie Classics? I forget how it is. TMC. Turner and Criterion got together and made a streaming service together. So now they finally have a podcast rolling and they have some cool Turner on-air talent doing the podcast. And they did an Alex Garland, who is the director of Annihilation and Ex Machina. And also he was the author of the novel, The Beach. So that was kind of cool. I didn't know that.
Relation to Judy Garland?
No, I don't know. I don't think so. but he was talking about how he loves the 70s movies. He loves, you know, Apocalypse Now and things like that. He loves adult filmmaking, not pornography, but like films made for grownups, you know?
Yeah. I know what you mean.
And I thought that was similar to something you kind of said. I think your beef with superhero movies and things like that is it's kind of simple. Simplified, it's dumbed down, it's kind of hit that broader audience. And, you know, the movies that he wants to make and the movies that he is a big fan of the 70s is this space where you don't get to go anymore. And he kept talking about Taxi Driver and he's like, nobody would make Taxi Driver anymore.
Are you reading my show notes tonight? Like, how did you know everything I'm going to talk about?
Well, there are three movies we're going to talk about, and they're all from A24. And A24 is a five-year-old film company who is making the kind of movies that Alex Garland was talking about. He talked about Handmaid's Tale being the most dramatic thing he saw last year. But I think A24 is a space where adults can come and make grown-up complex movies that don't have clean, tidy spaces, you know?
Right.
And it really, it plays well into, you know, the Oscars. They're 5 years old. They have 24 nominations to the Oscars. So I thought that's a pretty good track record. And they had these three movies that came out. After last week, we talked about The House of Tomorrow and how simple that look was and how simple those fonts were.
Right.
And then we have this week, we have How to Talk to Girls at Parties. And I'm like, see, the A's an anarchy symbol.
Right.
And it's all scribbled there and it's perfect. And I said, that's how you do font.
Right. Now, what's with the name A24? Do you know where that comes from?
I don't know where that comes from. I know the three mega millionaires that put it together, you know, stockbrokers and old film guys, old producers from other small art house kind of spaces. So there's a lot of old Hollywood.
So they have like a funding source.
Yeah, big bucks.
Yeah.
And these three guys got together and made this, you know, production company that is really just geared towards making these niche films and just getting them out there because they know this genre. They know this slice of complex movie making. It really doesn't fall under a genre. It's kind of all over the place, which I like. But it seems to be the theme is it's not tidy. As long as it's not tidy, they're happy with making it.
Right. And, you know, you were talking about adult-themed movies, you know, not porn. So last night with Audrey's broken finger and everything, our recording got put on hold until tonight.
Yeah.
So Clarissa and I are saying like, oh, you know, let's watch a movie. And she thought, there's like, I think we have like one episode of The Expanse left until we're finished until the next season. I said, you know, I need a break from that. We've been watching it like every night. So let's watch a movie. So we're looking on there. And of course, I wanted something lighthearted. I was already set up for brainy comedic
banter.
Yeah, banter. And I thought, let's watch something funny on Netflix, you know. And of course, what do we find? Sausage Party. So, oh my God, was it just awful. You know, I mean, if you thought, if I thought Game Over Man was crass and just ridiculous, at least there wasn't like buns and cocktails and douches running around like... It was just terrible. It was terrible. You know, whatever. Hour and a half of my life, I can't get back.
Yep.
So with that, we need to redeem ourselves with some serious film noir or maybe neo-noir type movies. So what do you say we get into Under the Silver Lake?
Yeah, let's do it.
So Ted, I want to ask you one question as we get into this. So when you were a young nerd, how many times did a hot girl, ask you when she's out swimming in a pool and you're like spying on her over the balcony, like, hey, come on in.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're there like, wait.
Wait. Let me count. Zero times.
Zero.
Zero yeah, like, times that happened.
Like, I'll count two. A never. So, yeah, I mean, that was the first part of this I thought was just tremendous. Like, wow, this guy is like this nerd and this hot, like young blonde woman is saying, hey, come on in the pool, hang out with me.
I thought that maybe she recognized him as Spider-Man.
Oh, well, there is that. Maybe, you know, he could have that going for him. But, you know, I definitely don't have that going for me. I know. But, you know, and then the other thing is she says, well, I saw you spying on me, and like she's OK with it. So, like, I mean, at some point, where's the stalker in all this, where like women are OK with stalkers and they invite him into the pool and then they show the metaphorical fireworks of getting it on.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I thought it was very, you know, all the way up through the fireworks, it was a very wholesome, like it was, you know, they're laying in bed together, holding each other's wrists and stuff like that. It was very new and young, and it takes a while to get into that space and to get weird.
Yeah. And this trailer is much like many of the others where it starts off, it kind of lures you into that sense of comfort, the nice music, and all of a sudden there's that switch. Now, getting to your reality, when you go looking for the girl the next day and she's not there anymore, now that's more like it, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I kind of
not only is she not there, but her apartment is completely empty.
Right.
And then you start losing your mind and the femmes are playing. Yes, all of that.
Well, but it was brilliant though how they have all that nice music playing. And I tried to find the soundtrack. I can't find the soundtrack for this, but two cool songs. I mean, I'm sure the soundtrack's going to be awesome.
I mean, to me, this trailer plays like a music video to The Violent Femmes added up. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's got that numerology thing going on with it. It feels like it's the early 80s.
And how cool is it though that at the cut from the first song to the second song, The Violent Femmes, and when he starts looking in the window and realizes she's not there, the music ends and it's just the ambient sound of like the street and the birds and all that stuff.
Oh, it's yeah, I mean that's perfect. And what better weekend to talk about that than the weekend of A Quiet Place's release? I know we talked about that trailer many months ago, it feels like.
Yeah, I'm sure it was at this point.
But it was something that we had talked about that we didn't know how John Krasinski was going to pull it off.
Uh-huh.
And apparently Twitter is on fire loving this movie. I mean, Stephen King came out and said how the lack of sound in the overall score and the audio of the movie opens your eyes more than you would if you were watching a regular movie with regular audio track on it.
Right.
And like Krasinski was like falling over himself on Twitter saying, Stephen King likes my stuff.
Well, and that's some of the brilliance of 2001 A Space Odyssey, is the lack of sound is what brought you into the, well, okay, pardon the pun, brought you into the space.
We're both dads. We can make those jokes whenever we want.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Now, so, and I would also argue that this movie Under the Silver Lake fills a few genres. One, it's a coming of age movie for sure. So he starts off the nerd and, you know, kind of jumping ahead a little bit when he goes to the party and they're like, welcome to purgatory. And he's like, I don't remember exactly what he said, but he's like, yes, it's great to be here. Like, you can tell he has an air of confidence about himself.
Yeah.
So with that air of confidence, you can see that he's coming of age and growing in like the LA scene and whatever it is. The other thing is, it's like a film noir movie, kind of going back to what we were talking about with the Turner classic movies or movie yeah. classics, whatever. But in that film noir state, I would almost call it like neo-noir because, yeah, it's that crime drama type thing, but it takes place in like the new L.A. in a sense, not the Bogart L.A.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love the idea of every generation having a Big Lebowski.
The dude binds.
So us Gen Xers, we have our Big Lebowski. It's Big Lebowski.
Totally.
So if the millennials need a Big Lebowski, they can have Under the Silver Lake, maybe. You know, maybe it's that good.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the other thing that's cool is, and this kind of just touches home a little bit, but living in L.A. for the better part of a decade and all these things, I mean, how awesome it is to see all the different scenes around L.A. where he goes to, like all the neighborhoods and the different like street scenes. And I mean, I thought that was pretty awesome for just knowing and being comfortable with LA and just after living here for a while.
I think the title, and is this a book again? Probably.
That I don't know.
But anyway, yeah, the just in the title itself, to talk about Silver Lake, it kind of has that inside LA feel when you're talking about Silver Lake. And
uh-huh.
So if you've ever seen the movie Keeping the Faith.
Keeping the Faith.
Yeah, it's about Ed Norton and Ben Stiller as New York holy men.
No, I don't know that one, but it sounds hilarious.
Oh, I love that movie.
Like Father Guido Sarducci?
No, it's more like these two guys who are, one's a priest, one's a rabbi, and they both fall in love with the same woman.
Oh, I thought they walked into a bar.
Well, they did, but they walked to the bar with Jenna Elfman and they both fell in love with Jenna Elfman.
Okay.
But so anyway, Ed Norton was also the director on that movie. And he talks about in his behind the scenes, he did audio commentary on that DVD. And he talks about getting the places to put himself and his best friend, Ben Stiller, not best friend, but the characters in these tucked away places in New York that only New Yorkers know about, to kind of peel back the facade of like the tourist New York versus the real New York that the New Yorkers would go to. So I hope the feeling with this title, like, you know, Under the Silver Lake, that hopefully you'd get a deeper dive on LA, not just Rodeo Drive and Hollywood.
Exactly. Yeah. And the one thing too that I find funny about movies like this, and again, it goes back to what we were talking about, like, so you have these haunted movies, so it's, you know, if they just got out, then there would be no movie, so they stay Amityville Horror. And we make the joke always that Eddie Murphy tells, you know, the white people to get out. Well, this movie's kind of like that, in the sense when she leaves, how many guys would be like, ah, man, like, she left, okay, I guess I'm just gonna go back play my video games. I'll just go back being like the depressed loser that I am, you know, whatever it is. No, this guy decides he's gonna play detective, and like you said, the Big Lebowski, he's got to go find who pissed on his carpet. I mean, but any other guy would just be like, yeah, God, she left. Oh, well. But then again, if that was the story, then there'd be no movie, right?
Right. And then, you know, there's a thing about how reliable is your narrator? How reliable is the person telling you the story? And I love the idea that our main character, Garfield, in this one, is like losing his mind.
Right.
So you don't know how reliable he is, as he's like pulling Dakota rings out of, you know, cereal boxes and like numerology and, you know, getting barked at by strange women, and who knows what's actually going on in his life. And is he just losing his mind, or is this really happening to him?
Yeah. Well, you know, the other side of it too, he starts going down this path of looking for her and everything. I mean, at what point is he or is he not a stalker? I mean, his whole point is to find this woman, and it's like he's going to the ends of the earth, and then he gets involved with like some cult leader, you know, the bearded cult leader guy wearing the bed sheet, which I want to watch the movie for no other reason than to find out how that guy even fits into the story.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're a stalker. You're only a stalker when you find them and then you follow them all the time, right? Just searching for them doesn't make you the stalker, right?
Or you find them, they don't want you there, but you continue to tag on. Maybe that's right. what makes a stalker.
Yeah.
Like when they express like, go away, I don't like you, and you're like, well, no, I'm here forever for you, I love you. and then you turn into like creepy guy.
Yes.
But which I guess is what ultimately makes this like a dark comedy in spite of all the other genres that I mentioned.
Yeah, I love the idea that it's, what did you call it? Neo-noir.
Yeah, kind of neo-noir.
Yeah. I think that fits it perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you see the poster for this one?
I did. Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Oh, clever.
You know? I mean, because it's about numerology, it makes sense to have it like a code.
Right.
It's a code that if you look at it, you can't even read it. But if you just spend 2 seconds looking at it a little harder, then it makes sense. But then I'm like, is it messaging it to you? Or is it telling you something different? Or is it making you think about it too long or too hard? And I'm like, no, I think it's the perfect amount. You know, it's understated.
You just have to read through it linearly and just follow it as it goes. I mean, yeah, I guess you could say there's a code, because that's kind of what he's looking for in the movie. I didn't think of it as a code when I first read it. I just saw it as like this like stacked lettering.
Yeah.
But maybe because I knew what I was reading, I don't know. Like if you just said, Jim, what does this say? And I didn't know, you know, like, I guess the well was poisoned.
Yeah, I happen upon this in the wild, you know, at as I drive by bus standees and things like that.
Right.
And when you see it in the wild, when you see it in the out-of-home space where it's meant to be,
yeah,
then it's a little more impactful, and it'll make you pause a little more because it looks like a code, but it's so easily decipherable that it is an effective code, because it makes you pause and your mind wants to figure it out. And then you're like, oh, that's that movie.
Yeah. And one thing about this trailer that's pretty cool is you know, oftentimes trailers just have these jump cuts that just take you all over the place. They're non-linear. They show you all the good parts out of order, and you don't know how they fit in.
Yeah.
I think this trailer is going to be true to the story, to where the way it begins is his early love affair, she leaves, and then kind of his naive growth in how he decides he's going to go chase after her. And along the way, he meets billionaire rock stars and whatever it is, which I don't understand why they're shooting at him inside of the recording studios and stuff, but I guess we have to watch to find out. And you see this coming of age movie throughout the story of how he gains confidence in himself as he's looking for her. And maybe that's the part of it, is she felt he had little confidence. Maybe she's leading him on this journey to build confidence. At the end, she goes, "See that? It all worked out. Now you're the man I want," you know?
Do you think he finds her at the end?
I'm going to say he does.
Oh, that's...
You don't think so?
I didn't think he would.
No?
I didn't think he would. No.
Yeah. So speaking of finds her, so her is Riley Keough.
Oh.
Keough?
Yeah.
That's right? That's how you would pronounce that?
I think Keough. Keough?
Keough?
I don't know.
But anyway, whatever. I guess if someone said Ted Willett, whatever. Yeah, but it's your name. You want to know. You want people to pronounce it proper. But she's the eldest grandchild of Elvis and Priscilla Presley.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah, a little insider info here. So daughter of Lisa Marie Presley. So yeah, just a little interesting background.
Cool.
So this is released June 22nd.
The end of June.
Yeah, so June 20. So pretty much when summer? I guess that's what, first day of summer, second day of summer, something like that. So it's pretty much the opening to summer weekend.
I think summer starts in April now.
Well, that's, yeah.
As far as movies go.
Unless you're on the East Coast, where they've been having just this horrible winter spring.
They're just getting hammered.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, overall, looks like you said, kind of a Big Lebowski, or this generation's Big Lebowski, but I think it looks seriously fun, entertaining, captivating, all that stuff. I think the camera work looks cool, like when he goes crashing to the earth and they kind of show the camera with his head slamming into the grass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Ah, brilliant. Makes you think. Yeah, I had to replay that one.
Yeah. It's fun shots to film as well as to watch, you know?
Oh, totally. Totally. Anyway, yeah, that's my thing. I mean, I'm probably going to see it, you know? I don't know if I'll see it in the theater. It's tough to get to the theater sometimes, but I definitely want to watch it. I think it looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm hoping maybe A24 has a faster line to streaming with a lot of these, because they want to capitalize on not just theatrical releases, but just getting it out there. So
yeah. Yeah.
Maybe they'll shorten that release window and get it into streaming services sooner.
I would venture to guess you're probably going to want to see this too.
I will definitely see this one.
Yeah. It looks like a lot of fun. And one of the funny things when I was doing some research on this and every, you know, and figuring out like the movies that it's kind of connected to and so on.
Uh-huh.
So when we, you know, I was doing some research on it and I went back and I'm looking through, and it's connected to like Inherent Vice with Joaquin Phoenix. So looking at it from that regard, and then you saying The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Yeah. How can I not watch it?
How is it related to Inherent Vice?
I think the kind of detective, private investigator type story where, you know, they're out. I'm not saying it's the same story, but like, it's just that kind of neo-noir story where he's trying to solve whatever the mystery is. And, you know, as kind of the everyday man citizen trying to solve the mystery.
Oh, in my younger years, that would be quite the triple bill for me. If we could watch Under the Silver Lake, Inherent Vice, and then end the night with Big Lebowski.
Oh, man.
That'd be amazing.
The dude abides. All right, man. What's your three-word review for Under the Silver Lake?
All right. Under the Silver Lake is a Spider-Man decoder ring.
Okay. Yeah. Clever.
Andrew Garfield is maybe, let's see, he's right in the middle. I can't place.
As far as Spider-Man?
As far as which Spider-Man. I think I like Holland the best, the new Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, back in the day when people would debate which Batman they like. You know, the Michael Keaton versus, you know what I mean? But so Spider-Man's decoder ring. All right, so let's decode the First Reformed.
All right. Before we do that, do you want to take a break?
Yeah. Coming up on Trailer Junkies Podcast, somebody's got to do something. If you enjoy our trailer reviews, or even if you hate them, let us know. We love feedback. We're on Twitter at TJunkiesPodcast and Instagram at TrailerJunkiesPodcast. You can also comment on the episodes at TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. Our email is info@TrailerJunkiesPodcast.com. And you could also leave us a review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's get back to it. All right, Ted, we're back. So First Reformed looks like it releases on May 18th. So coming up here pretty quick in about a month.
Yeah, First Reformed, amazing trailer. When I saw it, you know, when it came out, I definitely wanted to fit it into a podcast here. And I actually showed it to my wife because my wife's a big fan of these religious films. That this is kind of on the border. It's not really, it's not a horror film, right? It's just a straight up drama, it feels like.
I wouldn't say it's horror at all. I mean, it's a terrorist movie.
Yeah. It's a terrorist movie. Yeah, I guess so. If that's
right. I mean, maybe the beginning can give you the feeling because you don't know what to expect, right? So all these trailers lead you in, like they kind of lure you into like this feeling of comfort, like we always say.
Yeah.
And we get this feeling that they're luring you into like an exorcist.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's yeah, the way totally I felt feels anyway. Like,
yeah, I guess that's what I initially felt. And, you know, I started showing it to Anne and she didn't want to see it at first because I think it definitely throws out that vibe, you know?
Oh, totally does.
And the way that he's doing it. And I said, no, just give it a chance. And we watched most of it through. And then by close to the end, she was so into it. She said, oh, go back to the nightstand. I'm like, what are we doing? And I'm scrubbing through.
She's like dissecting it.
And she's like, the books on the nightstand, all the books on the nightstand mean something. They wouldn't show it to us in the trailer if it didn't mean something.
Right,
and I started
right.
laughing at her and she goes, why are you laughing at me? This is what you guys do, right? I said, I'm laughing at you because what you and I are talking about right now is going to end up in the podcast and then you're going to hear it like in a week from now and it's going to be surreal.
Yeah. Yeah. That's hilarious. But yeah. Like I was saying though, so I think it's that it starts off as podcasts do. They kind of lure you into the unknown. Maybe they provide comfort or whatever they provide. But this one takes a left turn that I didn't see coming when all of a sudden now you're looking at this Presbyterian, I guess, pastor who is all of a sudden like, or maybe not Presbyterian, he's probably Lutheran, but you're looking at this Lutheran pastor. Well, no, Clarissa and I, it's kind of funny that you guys were debating about the books. We were debating about which religion he was.
Yeah, no.
One thing that I noticed in Finland is that all their churches are very plain. There's nothing like on the walls or anything, and it's a Lutheran country. And so I asked her, I said, what do you think that is? She goes, well, looking at like the churches we've seen in Europe, this one has nothing on the walls. It's got to be Lutheran. So, you know, we're debating the finer points of Lutheran versus Presbyterian. I mean, I don't know, but.
But we can agree that though he's a disgraced pastor, right?
Hey, anybody who's pouring Pepto-Bismol into their scotch is disgraced. Or maybe he knows something we don't know at the end of a rough night. But, you know, yeah, he's certainly a disgraced pastor. But like I said, though, this podcast takes a turn that you didn't see coming because all of a sudden he becomes an investigator for like terrorism and or like a bomber, whatever. And one of the cards or something says something to the effect of it's like Taxi Driver meets eco-terrorism or something. I don't remember exactly how. Oh, no. It was Taxi Driver, the modern Taxi Driver live leak in the world of live leak videos with the eco-terrorism bent or something. And I'm just like, what are they talking about?
Well, the Taxi Driver thing, the director of this was the screenwriter of Taxi Driver.
Oh, okay. Because Scorsese directed Taxi Driver, right?
Right, exactly. And Paul Schrader, I think, is the name of this guy, who is the writer of Taxi Driver.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting to see that. But at the end, do you want to talk about the love scene at the end?
Were they floating?
They're levitating.
I was going to get there. We could get there now if you want to. I mean,
no, I mean, I, we could Throughout the rest of it, I agree with you wholeheartedly about, like, it's this sparse Spartan life. It's this, you know, he is repenting for his affair and repenting for his inability to make amends, to keep to his sacraments, you know?
Sure.
And it's just an amazing dive into his soul. And then, like, he wants to save the bomber, I guess. It's, you know, you say that he's investigating this crime, but I think he's investigating it to try to save this part of humanity. He's trying to save that person who would go to that place.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
He's trying to retrieve a lost soul to make up for his... the loss of his own soul.
Yeah, and do you think we've seen the bomber in this trailer?
I think so.
So we don't know who the bomber is, but they're somewhere in the trailer.
I mean, and then at the end of the day, like, once you know that, is that, how important is that? And is that the story, or is this priest, he's the story? His interpretation of the events is the story, you know?
Right.
I mean, similar when we're talking about Under the Silver Lake, you know, it's the telling of the story from the perspective of Andrew Garfield.
Yeah.
So it's as much as you want to believe the alcoholic remembrances of a disgraced pastor, you know, it's where you want to go in his life and how much you want to believe him and what he's doing for whatever purpose he's doing it.
And the comparison to Taxi Driver with the live leak videos and climate change. So in Taxi Driver, De Niro was upset at the politicians and all this, whatever. We don't have to go down that path. But in this one, whoever the bomber is upset at, in my opinion, I don't know. I'm speculating. But he's upset at eco, or maybe let me back up, those industries that contribute to climate change. So now he's becoming more of an eco-terrorist, where he's, maybe the bombing is of power plants, or, you know, because they show that aerial view of the smokestacks and everything. And maybe his whole point is to go and bomb these places so they can stop polluting and everything, the way Travis Bickle was after these politicians.
Right.
You talking to me? Well, I'm the only one standing here.
You talking to me? You talking to me? You talking to me? Well, then who the hell else are you talking to? Talking to me? Well, I'm the only one here.
And really, a quick aside. So I was taking an undergrad. I was taking a class. It was like a Phil 1 or Phil 2 class. And really cool professor. We would have to do a project where we watched a movie. He had a movie list, and we would choose a movie from the list. And then we would have to apply two philosophers, their worldview or their philosophic view on the world and life and everything. And then one aesthetic philosopher. So to a movie, and well, I chose Taxi Driver, of course. And so Clarissa and I were probably dating like a month or something.
Yeah.
So I invite her over. I said, hey, I have to watch this movie, you know, and never saw Taxi Driver in my life at this point. Hey, I have to watch this movie. And I got to write this paper on it. But, you know, why don't you come over, watch the movie together? You know, during the movie, I might take some notes and everything, but don't worry about it. You know, like, we'll just watch the movie and all this stuff. So she comes over to watch the movie, and it's Taxi Driver. And it's like, it starts off from like bad to worse with violence.
Yeah.
And by the time it was over and they have those shootouts and everything, I look at her, I'm like, ah, oh, I had no idea. You know, she goes, oh, no, don't worry about it. That movie was great. So, yeah, and lo and behold, she married me in spite of that, you know. Yeah.
You didn't know what you were getting into. I mean, with Taxi Driver, I'm sorry.
Oh, I thought you meant with Clarissa. No, I still didn't know. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, definitely following the theme of A24 tonight with the trailer perspective. I mean, another ordinary individual deciding it's his time to become an investigator.
Yeah, I think it's the storytelling, and I think investigating is an interesting way to make sure that you're spelling everything out for your audience, you know? It's kind of an easy trope to help keep people in the story.
Yeah, it guides the viewer through what you're trying to tell them.
Guides the narrative, so to speak.
The narrative, there you go.
Yeah, what did you think about their films last year? They had Lady Bird and The Disaster Artist. I don't know if you saw either of those trailers or... We know we saw Lady Bird because we did it for the Oscar shows, and we didn't think much of it. but it was quite the Academy darling, I guess.
Well, I mean, Lady Bird, again, another coming-of-age movie. And, you know, I felt that it told just a fun story of how this girl kind of transformed with her mom's relationship and her, or I should say her relationship with her mom and everything. The other one, though, I'm not familiar with at all, so I haven't seen. Yeah, A24 comes out of nowhere. Like you said, they're only 5 years old, and then they're throwing a lot of money at things, getting good actors like Ethan Hawke, and, you know, it's incredible.
Yeah.
What they're doing. So let's talk about that levitation scene. All I could hope for is it's a dream. I don't know.
What do you mean by that? Do you mean you don't want it to be part of the movie?
I don't know what it, how does it fit in? Like, he's investigating a terrorist eco-bomber, or whatever the person is. And there's a scene where he falls in love for, I don't know. And the next thing you know, he's levitating in a room with no furniture. It's just, I don't see how it could fit in.
I liken that scene to, here's a story. I was shooting my film in Prague, my student film in Prague, and we're setting the frame up on an exterior shot, and we're in amongst trees, right?
Okay.
And in the top of the frame, there's a little branch that's sticking in the top of the frame. And I'm like, oh, okay, there's a branch up there. And it's kind of the only branch that's in the top of the frame. And our cameraman comes over and he's like, there's something on the top of the frame. It looks like the boom. I go, oh, it's not the boom. The boom guy's over there. You know, it's a branch. And he goes, no, I know it's not the boom guy. I said it looks like a boom. So it looks like a mistake. So we should get it out of the picture because it looks like a mistake. And it doesn't matter what it really is. You're not sitting there with the audience and you don't have a chance to tell them, no, there was really a branch in the top of the frame. And it's really part of my composition. So you don't have, you know, it has to stand on its own. And to me, that's what this scene does to this whole trailer. It's like you're going along a clip and it's talking about Taxi Driver and it's talking about all this grittiness of the reality of this space. And even if it is a dream sequence, I would say it has no place in the trailer because it is such outside the lines of what the rest of the trailer is selling you.
Yeah, completely, completely. Right. No, I couldn't agree more with that. I mean, it's like everything they're telling us about this story is the redemption of this pastor, how he's trying to make amends for his son dying in Iraq, and he's telling his son that, you know, he encourages him to enlist. 6 months later, he's dead. He's lost. He's trying to get his flock back on track, which he's trying to get himself back on track. And, you know, he's turning to alcohol and he's doing his journal and he's just trying to figure out who he is, what he's about, where he stands in the eyes of God and all these sorts of things. The investigation of the bombing, looking at the internet on how to make bombs, all this stuff. And then all of a sudden they're levitating. How does that fit in?
And even if it does, even if the movie explains it,
it doesn't fit into the trailer.
And it makes sense, then keep it out of the trailer so you stop confusing people as to what this movie's about.
Completely.
Because then, you know, Anne was into this movie and she still will probably see it. But I think that she doesn't like any horror stuff at all. So that was like, oh, maybe you see this one first, let me know how it is. And then if there's no horror stuff in it, because that's if they're levitating throughout and if there's all these things going on, then she's checked out. She doesn't want to see it. She will feel completely misguided by this.
Well, and it goes back to what I said a little bit ago. So you get the vibe in the beginning that it might be going down the path of The Exorcist. And then it turns, like I said, it takes a left turn to where you have no idea. All of a sudden, it's like a terrorist investigation. And then it goes to where they're levitating, which brings you back around to, is this like The Exorcist? Although without the turning heads and green puke.
Just a lovelier version of The Exorcist because they're levitating together.
Yeah, it's like a Lovesorcist. Okay, whatever. I tried.
The Sexorcist.
The Sexorcist. There you go. All right. Anyway, so you're thinking you might see this?
I want to see it. I'm an Ethan Hawke fan. I like Ethan Hawke. I don't know. I don't know where it fits in my movie viewing. Again, as the majority of the stuff, let's get it streaming quickly so we can see it.
Yeah, this is one of those movies. I agree. I don't know how it's going to fit in. If I see it, it would be one of those accidental viewings. You know, you plop down on the sofa at maybe at your house or whatever, and it just happens to be on and you watch it, right? It's like an accidental viewing.
Yeah.
I don't think I would be like, Clarissa, this is one for the books. We have to see it, you know, and everything. I can't tell you, the pacing seems a little bit slow, and I don't care for movies that are paced too slow. They don't hold my interest. They don't need to be fast and lots of jump cuts and everything, but Under the Silver Lake, I think it would be a good pacing for me, right? It's gonna just continuously chug along at a decent rate. And it's going to, like, you don't know where it's going, hold your interest. This, you might not know where it's going, but I can see myself, like, losing interest and falling asleep.
I definitely have the high chance of falling asleep in this movie because of exactly what you said. But I do like, the thing I like about this trailer and the thing that makes me still interested to see it, even though it kind of throws all the conventions that we're used to seeing in modern day filmmaking, is Ethan Hawke's body language throughout. I mean, he changes his body language throughout this whole thing. When he's alone, he's a different person. You know, when he's sitting across from the woman who's talking to him, he's a different person. When he's talking to his ex-girlfriend, he's a different person. You know, every time he's sitting or moving in space, he's acting with his body.
Well, he takes on a different role.
Yeah, no, he's acting with his body and with every part of himself. So it's an interesting look.
He has the scene where he's in panic. Somebody's got to do something, you know, and he has that like panic moment.
Yeah.
I mean, I think his act, you know, if we look at that in isolation, I think his acting is going to be tremendous. I don't think you're going to have an issue with the acting. I don't even think the story is going to be bad. I think it might be mostly just the pacing of the whole thing that's going to keep me from wanting to see this.
Venturing out.
And maybe I'm wrong, but overall, I mean, you know, that's where I'm at with it. So 3-word review. What do you have?
Oh, man. Did I have a 3-word?
He forgets, this guy.
I think I wrote it. I scribbled it on a piece of paper over there, and I don't know what it is anymore.
Oh, no. Do we need to take another break so you could go get your 3-word review and come back?
Let's do that.
Okay, we'll be back. All right, Ted. So now that you went and got your scribble, what is it?
It's Rest in Greenpeace.
Really? Really? Rest in Greenpeace. So we have to take a break. So you can go.
Are you glad
scribble.
You waited for that one?
All right, man. Wonderful. Wonderful. So, okay. How about this? So you can redeem yourself with How to Talk to Girls at Parties.
Okay. So How to Talk to Girls at Parties, our third A24 film of this week for our trailer spective, all A24 films. And before we go into that, I just wanted to say, if you go to YouTube and you're looking at trailers for A24, I really appreciate the care that A24 has taken in the YouTube space to say the title and the fact that this is a trailer and a nice still that they've selected for their official trailers that they put on YouTube. So a lot of times when you're looking for trailers and you see new trailers are coming out, there's a new Han Solo trailer coming out tomorrow. And I'm sure the minute that it comes out, Joe Blow and Screen Junkies and everybody else, they'll just devour it and put their own logo on top of it and put out their version of it.
Sure.
And sure, everybody loves that because they get a billion more hits across the board. But I always want to see the official trailer. You know, I always want to
absolutely
do what the studio has put out. And now that you see the way that A24 puts out their trailers, you know that if it has that nice little faint box on the bottom and it has the nice logo treatment and a cool still, you know that you're watching the real deal.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a neat unifying theory across all of A24 stuff.
Couldn't agree more.
And then How to Talk to Girls at Parties. What an amazing trailer, don't you think?
I don't even know where to begin.
At the beginning.
How about we begin at London, 1977?
There you go.
Right in the heart of the punk scene. Yeah. So I think the best part about this is not only is it in the heart of the punk scene, but it's also the birth of New Wave and Devo. Right?
Yeah.
We figured out where New Wave came from because they must be from California.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, pretty brilliant trailer. Yeah, I don't know where even where to go with this one. what are your first impressions?
Oh, I mean, I love the way everything goes. You know, the trailer is enough of a story for me to watch repeatedly as its own piece of art.
Yeah.
This is one of those places where the movie could be great. The movie could be just this. Whatever it is, it's going to be an amazing thing. And the trailer is easily, repeatably watchable. So
sometimes with trailers, there's so much going on and there's a lot of action in the background and things you want to see. And I'll watch them at quarter speed, half speed, three-quarter speed, depending on the trailer. So this one I pretty much watched at about half speed. And, well, you know, I watched it the whole way through first, of course. And then I'm like, there's a lot going on here. I'm missing some stuff. You know, I watched it through at half speed and there's a lot to be seen. The first thing I kind of don't get is why. I mean, okay, so punk and everything, it just seems kind of bizarre with the aliens. I'm assuming they're aliens. Would that be safe to say?
Oh, they're totally aliens.
Yeah. And just, again, when we look back at First Reformed and we want to know how the levitation fits in, how on earth do aliens fit in? Or is that kind of where punk is birthed out of, is aliens?
I don't know.
Well, maybe not, I guess, because we brought punk to them because, you know, she wanted to have more punk done to her. And then... again,
she had a little too much punk in the middle. Did you see that when she threw up in his mouth?
Oh, my God. That was... well, when you're watching at half speed, holy cow, man. Talk. It's like slow-mo in the mouth. Brutal. But then it's, again, a coming-of-age movie. I mean, there's a lot of these, it seems. And the metaphorical, I met you, we have our new love affair, and now fireworks again, indicating something. But, yeah, I mean, I don't even know where to go with this. It was so bizarre.
No, I love it. I love this is innocence, right? I mean,
I would say so. Yeah.
There's nothing more innocent than an alien that doesn't even know humanity.
They're trying to understand our culture.
Exactly. The culture of humanity, not the culture of England over America or any other country. It's just like we're aliens from another planet and we need to know what humans are like.
And how cool is it? Their first encounter with American with earthling culture is the London punk scene.
No, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And it's like we've done two punk movies in 2 weeks, so hopefully we're not pigeonholing ourselves too much. But like I was telling you, the title treatment of this is what I expect from a punk movie. So it's awesome.
With the font you were talking about and everything.
The font, the title treatment, all of that. It's just an amazing look. What's up with the girl with the split middle finger?
I wanted to bring that up too. So she, well, and the best too is it's like right at the end when she's flipping off the band, like you see the finger and she's kind of looking at her own finger in confusion. And then you go to the end of the movie and what Nicole Kidman is like screaming out, like, come join us, or I don't know, whatever she says. And then there she is like flipping off the band with her split middle finger.
It's the best of both worlds, right? Because in the UK, that's how you flip people off, is with two fingers. And here in America, you flip people off with a middle finger.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the best of both worlds. It gets both.
And if that thing has dexterity, oh, man, what you couldn't do with that thing.
The best violinist, pianist you could ever imagine.
Wow. Incredible. Yeah. In about 56 seconds, Alex Sharp, I'm not sure which character it is, he encounters those people in like down the alley. Are they eating like a person, do you think? What do you think is going on there?
Where is this?
At 56 seconds into the trailer.
A lot of latex. A lot of latex throughout this whole thing.
Yeah. Because that's kind of where the guy turns and he's like, he sees it. And then he goes to his buddies and he's like, we got to get out of here.
Oh, I didn't think it was that.
Because he sees something like criminal happening.
Oh, I thought it was something else. I thought it was like some raunchy sex there in the middle. I don't know.
No, I totally felt like that person was like eating somebody or something with like the sound effects that were going on. I don't know, because then his buddy freaks out and says, we got to get out of here. And then the fat one's like,
that was the future.
You know, but yeah, the puking into the mouth, though, like you mentioned, I mean, I just can't unsee that anymore. It was just awful.
But yeah, you know, I mean, when you figure out it's an alien movie and not just a latex movie, I think, and again, watching it at half speed, when the one woman rips open the guy's mouth.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That is just some terrible makeup right there, because you could totally see that the one hand is under the chin and then, you know, obviously pulls down the jaw, but like not even in the mouth. You could tell her like that they totally like try to get you fooled. Do you know what I'm getting at?
Yeah. I think.
Yeah, low budget is the way I look at it.
It's meant to be played at full speed.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
You know, I think the way that they've budgeted this film, it's like, we'll just do it practical as much as we can. And we'll just hope for the suspension of disbelief for our audience, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Who do you think the demographic for this movie is? Like, who are they after?
I think they're after, you know, the young Gen Xers down.
Okay, yeah.
I think all the way through the millennials.
Yeah, so young Gen Xers, meaning like people born, what, like early 80s till like 2000-ish?
Yeah, all the way to teenagers. Yep, 2000 is good year. Yeah,
I would say that's probably who they're looking at. I don't know if I'm going to see this one. I think I would take a pass.
Yeah, it's out there.
Yeah, watching the punk music and kind of that scene and stuff. I mean, sure, I'd enjoy that. It probably reminds me of my youth a little bit, I guess. But I think the underlying story, I'm not going to get into it.
I think it, you know, to me, it has that niche, that cult classic kind of space.
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, and that kind of leads.
There's going to be people who are going to watch it. They're going to fall in love for whatever they fall in love with it. You know, somebody's going to like it for whatever their reasoning. And then it's going to, you know, one for me is how can I forget? Oh, Spinal Tap.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. To the stage.
You go right straight through this door here, down the hall.
Yeah.
Turn right.
Yeah.
And then there's a little jog there, about 30 feet. Jog to the left.
We don't have time for that.
Go straight ahead.
We'll trust you.
Yeah. Turn right the next two corners. And the first door you sign, authorized personnel only.
Yeah.
Open that door. That's the stage.
You think so?
You authorized. You're bringing musicians, aren't you?
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah. Rock and roll.
Rock and roll.
Get it.
No, this way.
This way.
Rock and roll.
Rock and roll. Here we go. Hello, Cleveland. Hello, Cleveland.
You must have made a wrong turn.
And every time you watch it, you always see something you haven't seen before.
Yeah.
So this is going to be like maybe this generation's Spinal Tap or something.
These go to 11.
Oh, if they're lucky, yeah. I mean, I was thinking more like Earth Girls Are Easy. I don't know if you've seen that one.
No.
Oh, that's, yeah. It's like, I don't know if it was produced by MTV, but it had a Julie Brown in it and
okay.
Gina Davis. And
that sounds like something you would see on like early years of Sci-Fi Channel.
Oh, yeah. So that was
like, what was the other one? Oh, what was that one? It was Mars, Amazon Women from Venus or something. Or Amazon Women from the Moon or something.
Oh, maybe. I don't know that one.
But, you know, some of those like silly 80s movies. Like B-rated, probably C-rated movies.
They're the hangover movies.
But I think this is better than a B-rated movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is from the creators of Hedwig and the Angry Inch, so that got a lot of critical acclaim.
What do you think? You think you'll see this?
I'll see this one. You know, I think as in what we're finding out with all the A24 movies, I'm not going to the theater.
Right.
The only, I was very close both last night and tonight trying to go to A Quiet Place just because of all the buzz and the hype and everything around it. But I did not. I went to the gym instead.
There you go. You did the responsible thing. No, I think A24 movies, all the movies that I've seen trailers for, there's probably been about a dozen or so. All of them, to even include this one, How to Talk to Girls at Parties, all of them are movies I'd probably want to see.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I would not see any of them in the theater. These are all Friday night. Let's get some pizza, make some popcorn, and, you know, crack a couple of beers or whatever, and we'll watch them on our sofa. Kind of that home comfort feel that you're going to want to sit down and just enjoy a nice night at home with your family. Maybe not this movie, a family movie, but some of the other ones, though, you know, with your wife or whatever, you're going to sit down to watch them and just chill out on the sofa and feel like you've watched something that was actually a decent movie. Like early on, we mentioned that the movies have like more adult themes, I guess.
Yeah.
Not these ridiculous guy buddy movies that we always talk about, or buddy guy movies.
But I think the buddy comedies and the buddy action flicks, I think there's something to be said about the action flicks and the big screen, right? I think part of the reason that the smaller screen is okay is because of the intimacy you have with the characters.
Yeah, yeah.
Back when in the 70s, when Taxi Driver and Apocalypse Now were out in the theaters, there was no venue in the house that could come anywhere close to a theater experience, right?
And even if you had it in the house, you didn't have a 65-inch screen hanging on your wall.
That's what I'm saying. Like you could bring it home, but you're watching it on a small box, you know, with blurry, non-high definition, you know, standard def.
Right. Banging the side of the TV.
Yeah. Letterboxed, who knows, you know, pan and scan back in that time frame. So
right.
I think the way that we've taken that into this space, maybe there's a space for this universal release where they put it in the theater and they send it to streaming all at the same time for this genre so that it can recoup its money faster and just move on to the next $20 million project.
And that's a good point, too, because if you're talking about Avengers Infinity War or something, I mean, that's not for the small screen, because you want to capture all that eye candy and the big booms and all that stuff. I mean, unless you have a huge home theater at home, but the average person, that's not going to capture it the way it's meant to be seen on the small screen in your living room. Where these movies can capture that because, like you said, you're more intimate with the character and not necessarily the action and the CGI that's going on.
And you also want to eventize it, like the Avengers and all that stuff. It needs to have the idea of going out of your house and going into the movie theater and sitting down in the movie theater with your popcorn and then watching a film together with 200 strangers, you know?
Yeah, who all share that common interest. And you're building up that anticipation while you're waiting in line because you have whatever the pre-release tickets for the IMAX version and 3D and whatever it is. But you and all the other nerds are out there waiting to watch this in anticipation. And once they open the box office, like everybody's like rushing the seats and, you know, maybe you're pre-ordered or whatever it is. And you have that week long anticipation of, man, Friday night we're going, you know, and
Thursday night. What are you talking about? Thursday night we're going.
Thursday night. At midnight.
Thursday night at midnight. And you have to see it in IMAX because it was shot in IMAX.
Right. Where these movies, I don't think anybody's waiting in line for a movie like this unless like there's just people in front of you waiting to go see Avengers, right? But anyway, how about a 3-word review for this one?
All right. So I kind of gave a little hint earlier. Easy alien girls.
Easy alien girls. Well, yeah, I guess so.
Because Earth Girls Are Easy was mine from back in the day with Jeff Goldblum and all those guys. So instead of Earth Girls Are Easy, Easy Alien Girls.
Makes perfect sense. Hey, how about we do a quick bonus?
There we go.
Yeah, you brought up A Prayer Before Dawn.
Yeah. So it was kind of hilarious when, well, I mean, I don't know, for me, as I'm watching the YouTube trailer for First Reformed, the next trailer up after that was this one. And it's A Prayer Before Dawn. And I'm like, you know, all it shows is this guy's back with the tiger tattoo on it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, is this do they have like another priest movie that they have going at A24? Is this like a theme that they do where they do like priests flagellating themselves and then we're going to do a movie about it? And then, you know, I watch it because I'm like intrigued by the title. You know, it's an official trailer because it's got that cool little thumbnail on it.
Yeah.
And it's completely like, it mixes like all these genres and it's like this British guy or something and he's in Southeast Asia somewhere and the first minute and a half are like all over the place, and you know it's a fish out of water story, you know, when we're talking about all our plots.
Yeah.
And then about 90 seconds into it, it has this great fight sequence where it just breaks down and it just becomes this kickboxing real MMA kind of stuff, except because of what we've seen in the first 90 seconds, this guy's fighting for his life because his cellmates have told him that he either wins for the jail or he's dead, right?
Right.
He's like these tattooed-faced, scary guys, you know? And the fact that it's shot in the real jail cells, you know, it had that Turkish, what is that? Midnight Express.
Yeah, I was thinking that too.
It had a Midnight Express feel to it, you know? And I think this is based on a book. So it was just taking me all these different places. And at the end, I was like, oh, it's like Bloodsport. You know, it's a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie at the end, you know? So I think it's, but Bloodsport is really like when I was a kid. Bloodsport was the one to see. So I just love the last 30 seconds of it just going balls to the wall fight sequence.
Well, how on earth do you get access to a prison to film all these people in prison? I mean, that is just so cool.
Right?
And then, so you have these face tattooed dudes and you know they're the real deal. And I always love these kind of movies because you're watching people who maybe they're like, whether it's American or in this case, Thai or whatever they are. And you're watching these kinds of movies and like you're watching an American gangbanger movie and the real actors, or I should say the actors are real gangbangers, right? And somehow without any acting training, without any theater, without any of that stuff, they are the best actors out there because they're just playing themselves. They're just being who they are.
No, it's amazing. It's like Danny Trejo, you know, like when you see Danny Trejo in all those movies coming up and he's just like that big guy and he's the beef behind the fast talking guy. So I love Danny Trejo and he's so personable. You know, he runs a taco place. He runs a donut shop now. He's all over the place.
Yeah.
But then on the other side, you have actors like Robert Lissardo. I don't know if you know him.
Robert Lissardo. No, I don't know him.
Well, you'd know him if you saw him. But I ran into Robert Lissardo on the Third Street Promenade. We're walking. We had some family from out of town. So we went down to Third Street Promenade. And he's sitting like at the top of the Third Street Promenade. And he's just sitting there all by himself. And he's got tattoos like from his neck over his whole body.
Wow.
You know, and he wears a wife beater. I think he was on Nip Tuck for a little bit. He did a little part on Nip Tuck.
Oh, I know who the guy is. Yeah. Yeah.
He's all over. He's done a lot of television, a lot of movies. Obviously a character actor for that thug life.
Total, yeah.
And I saw him there sitting at the top there. And for a minute, I walked up, being like a block away from him, I started to walk towards him. And he was so deep in thought or whatever that I was just like, oh, This is it. I've stopped walking right there. I was still like a good half a block away from him. I was like, all right, he's in his own space. Let's not bother him. Cause I don't know how personable he is. So he was in his own space and I just did not bother him.
Yeah. And that's what's cool about these kind of movies. When you get real people who are living the life that you're portraying, it's what they see every day and what they do every day. So that's probably one reason why they're good actors, because they're not acting. They're just doing what they would typically do. And you kind of get that vibe too from like The Wire, you know, and all that kind of stuff with all the gangbangers and so on. But the cool thing about it though is when you get these kind of movies with these kind of actors and things, like you can't tell whether or not they have professional training in acting or how they got to, like, how do they even cast these people and like how freakishly scary they are with tats all over their face. They're probably completely unemployable otherwise, but why not hire them for Hollywood movies and they'll even make more money than if they just got a regular day job anyway.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. Like, are they even out? Are they even like, are they just prisoners in a prison? And when you get this, the prison, you get all the people in the prison as well.
Yeah. And then I'd also want to ask too, okay, so you go to Thailand to film this and you're in the prison. Does the Thai government like say, well, you're prisoners, you better act or like that's it? And so you like almost like slave labor acting. Like, where's the line drawn?
Well, that was the interesting thing. It was also a theme within the trailer, I thought, where it became your tribe. This jail was the tribe of these prisoners. And the prisoners, it's almost as if they were in for life, or it didn't matter what they were in for, because this was their life. Because when they talk to him about fighting, and it's like, no, you don't understand. When you fight for the prison. You represent us.
For your wing or whatever it is.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it was like, it was an amazing, like a different understanding of what prison life is in other countries. I mean, here it's a business. I don't have to go into too much of that, I guess, but.
Yeah, the politics of it, sure.
The politics of it. But here it's like a way of life almost, you know?
Yeah, whatever landed them there is water under the bridge. This is now their new life and just how they behave.
Yeah.
Within the prison. It's like the prison code.
Yeah.
You know, so you have the code of each wing of the prison. Let's say there's four wings and there's like four contestants, and each one is like, it's almost like a tournament fight.
Yeah. One last thing, just to go back to the thing I was talking about as far as the title treatments and the thumbnails. I just did another search for The Prayer Before Dawn, and the top find is the official A24 trailer. And then the second one is Joe Blow's trailer, but Joe Blow has taken the still of the guy with the scary face tattoo, and it's his movie.
Yeah.
So again, you know, if you're a production company, you want to be able to put forth the still and the image that you want to be seen, which is the man in solitude with the one tattoo on his back telling you just enough about this story to make you watch the video, not a scary face tattoo Southeast Asian guy.
Right, right. Yeah. But yeah, I think it goes along with what we were talking earlier. I definitely wouldn't see it in the theater, but this would be one for home for sure. I mean, I don't know if I could convince Clarissa, hey, Clarissa, there's this cool like fight movie that I want to watch. You know, I don't know if I'd get her there, but it would be one of those nights when, you know, I don't know, she goes to bed early and it's like, yeah, stay up and watch a movie. What should I watch?
There you go.
Let's watch like this fish out of water in Southeast Asia prison movie. All right. Yeah. You know, you brought it up earlier and I thought, you know, we could do a little quick bonus. Like I said, not to belabor the point, but overall A24 seems like they're putting out some pretty solid films.
Yeah.
I would say borderline artsy, good storytelling. I would argue all of a sudden more back to like the 40s and 50s, maybe with more dialogue, more storytelling, less explosions, you know, probably more along the lines of the type of movies I like.
Yeah. They're like art house critical darlings, you know?
Yeah, yeah, totally. And no, it was cool. I had a good time tonight. I like talking about these. These were a lot of fun.
All right. Had fun.
All right, Ted. We'll talk to you later, man. Had a good time. You have a good night.
Thanks, Jimmy. See you. Bye.
All right. Bye.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.